The following programming is sponsored by Don Beischel. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list, and a Statue of Liberty starts
singing. Hello, Southeastern Pennsylvania. Welcome to The Conservative Voice. I am Joanne Sapressi. My co-host, Don Beischel, will not be here today as he is attending the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. So he will be digesting a lot of valuable information that I am sure he will share with us next week. Today, I will be having a conversation with Megan Brock about the many concerns that parents have these days due to the things that we have been made more aware of over these past 2.5 years, like masking our children, gender ideologies being pushed on our children in our schools, and other education concerns, the changes happening in the Disney Corporation, and so much more. Children seem to be targeted in our classrooms, entertainment, online, and in so many other avenues. There is a mass manipulation happening to the minds, beliefs, behavioral patterns in a variety of ways of our children. We are seeing school board directors and teachers make choices that many parents are concerned about, questioning, and fighting against. Disney has been recently making drastic stances that will be affecting our children's mindsets and behavior. Another popular kid-focused company, Nickelodeon, is following suit. Celebrities are influencing our children's ideals and emotional patterns as well. There is a lot to unpack and a lot for parents to become aware of for the sake of our children and the future of our society. I am thrilled to have Megan here today so we can dive into these important issues together. Megan is a parent of elementary age children, a small business owner, and a lifetime resident of Bucks County. She has been active for several years now, trying to uncover the truth of what is happening in schools and standing up at board meetings to voice her concerns and thoughts. So, hello, Megan, and welcome to The Conservative Voice.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I am so thrilled to have this opportunity to chat with you. We've been friends on Facebook for a little while now, but we've never actually talked to each other. So this will be our first time. So I'm really excited to do this. So first, before we dive into these important issues, I think it's wise to get to know you a little better and to have an understanding of your mindset and worldview. So you are a mother of how many children?
Two children.
So there have been many things thrown at parents over these past couple of years. What was the one thing that got your attention and motivated you enough to start researching for the truth and speaking up at board meetings, or was it a combination of different concerns?
I think that the major event that kind of got me on this path of just trying to be more involved with the community and understand what's happening was when the school shut down on March, I believe it was March 13, 2020. That was just a very, I'll never forget what that felt like to hear that announcement that school was closing for 2 weeks. And obviously it just progressed from there.
Yes. And how old are your children?
They are 6 and 8.
So how did, so at that time they were probably 4 and 6. Would that be correct?
Yes. Preschool, so, and then my son was in kindergarten. Yes.
So he just was finally in school and now he had to leave. So how did that impact him?
I don't think virtual learning is an appropriate medium of education for young children. I mean, the school, obviously, it was a difficult time. Those initial few months were really difficult. No one really knew what was going on. I think that the school they were in did the best job that they could. But obviously, it was frustrating for him to be in front of a screen all day. We're pretty intentional about not letting our kids have a lot of screen time, because there's a lot of guidelines that say it's not good for their brain. So it was quite frustrating for him, for us, for everyone, I think. Students, teachers, it was difficult. So it didn't go very well.
No, I can't imagine that it did. I have a daughter and she is 17. And a year before all of this happened, she wanted to homeschool, and I did too. So she tried to homeschool, and about 3 months went by and she became depressed and she just was not herself. You could see she shifted and she changed. So even kids who are older they have, I've seen that they have a really hard time handling sitting in front of the screen all day without the interaction of other students. So as your son finally able to go to school, interact with all these kids, and then have that pulled away from him must have been really challenging. So I wanted to, one of our local newspapers labels you as a staunch opponent to mask mandates and vaccination requirements in schools. Would you consider this to be true?
I would say that's true, yes. I am very firmly believe in medical freedom and bodily autonomy. I think that most people, regardless of the size of if you consider yourself right or left, I think that that's something that people who believe in the Constitution and who are critical thinkers understand how important it is as a society that we have and we maintain medical autonomy and medical freedom.
So I was listening to interview you did on another show, and I learned a lot about your vaccine research and history. So would you mind sharing some of your background as to why you are against vaccine mandates?
My background is that I was a registered nurse, and I worked in a very large pediatric facility. And I know nursing school, I never really learned anything about vaccines or VAERS or anything other than where you give them. So when I was pregnant with my son, my husband actually had asked if I would just do some research and kind of, look into some of the science and some of the legislation around vaccines and the schedule, just being kind of proactive as we would do with anything, right? Especially when it's your children. So as I looked into it, I very much was like, okay, of course we're just going to give the whole schedule. I'm going to do what everyone says to do. And didn't really think about it. But then when I started looking into it and started learning about some of the liability clauses, how, pharmaceutical companies basically have no liability for any vaccine, thanks to the Vaccine Act of, I think it's 1986, 1987. Yeah. I started wondering, why does every infant get something like hepatitis B? Where is the science saying that should be recommended for every single child, when obviously there may be some parents, if you had a hepatitis B positive parent, where that might make sense. But why are we just having these very broad brush interventions? And then when I would ask my pediatrician about it, most of the time, unfortunately, just asking a question was enough to kind of get shamed, scorned, even kicked out of practice. We got kicked out of a practice for not wanting to give every single vaccine. It's not, I think a lot of times you get labeled as like, oh, you're just anti-vax. And that's not true at all. I think most people really would say they're pro-science, they're pro-safety, right? You want to see certain safety measures and really questioning the need for some vaccines, like hepatitis B is a great example of why are we with a broad stroke saying every single infant needs to get that vaccine.
Yeah, I absolutely can relate with everything you're saying, because I remember when I had my daughter, my first daughter, I was wondering, why do we need to give vaccines to my little baby, like all of these at once? And so I started questioning my daughter's pediatrician, and he actually got so mad at me and kicked me out of his office. And I was asking for the package insert so I could read all of the details. So I think it's a sign of a really wise and smart person who actually will question things.
It doesn't really build trust or relieve any safety concerns when you ask a question and you're immediately either given a label or just talked down to, or even had, expressions of anger for asking a question about what's going into your child's body. Those are conversations that should be open and should be easy to have rather than be associated with a lot of shame and name calling.
Absolutely. It made me wonder why is he getting so irate and angry over this? And it made me even dig deeper. So I completely understand. So what do you think is going to happen with the current situation we have with the coronavirus vaccines? You think they will be added to this big list of, 73 doses now our children are getting throughout their lifetime? Do you think that they will be adding it?
I think it's definitely in the realm of possibility, right? In adults, we're seeing they just said they're going to be offering a fourth booster shot. I guess it really depends on if there are long-term safety studies and what the data will show, but I mean, I definitely think it's probably in the realm of possibility. And I think there are, I think I read somewhere that there are some schools in the West Coast, on the West Coast, that were considering even mandating it for school in the fall. So I do think it's a possibility. In Pennsylvania, fortunately, we have pretty strong legislation, which does give parents, you know, a philosophical, religious, and medical exemptions if there's something to, you know, if you don't want to do a certain vaccine, you're able to still send your child to school without being forced to do so.
Pennsylvania has one of the best exemption laws, which I greatly appreciate. Hopefully we don't turn into California. Didn't they recently just get rid of the religious exemption?
I think it was a while ago. I thought it was more recent, but I went back and looked. I think it might have been 2015, 2016.
Wow.
And then they were also getting rid of their, I think the more recent move was to even possibly get rid of medical exemptions. I know that in New York, I believe it was 2019, I'm not sure, but they did pass a bill getting rid of the philosophical and religious exemptions, and they tried to do the same thing in New Jersey in early 2020, but it didn't pass the legislation. There was like a very big kind of uprising of parents, and the legislation fortunately didn't pass.
You've done a lot of research.
Been following this for a long time. I mean, since my son's 8, so I kind of started researching, and I do tend to kind of go all in when I'm interested in a topic. So
that's really smart.
Hey, Joanna,
oh, Stan is here. Welcome,
hey, Joanna,
Stan.
I'm here. Yes, I've been listening diligently. You know, one of the things, and if you can discuss this, is that I had one of my contractors came in the office and said, "Stan, did you get the vaccine?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, why not?" I said, "Well, when I hear the term vaccine, I think of the Salk vaccine, because when you get the Salk vaccine, you don't get polio and you can't give it. And the same with smallpox, and the same with some of the other, like shingles and some of the other ones that are out there." I said, "So this is a jab that you get that even if you get it, I don't care how many shots you get, you can still give it and still get it. Am I accurate in saying that?"
I mean, I think, are you talking specifically about the COVID vaccine?
The COVID vaccine, yes.
Yeah, I believe that it is, there's not, that you can still transmit it. I mean, I think we've seen a high number of percentage of people, even who've been hospitalized, have been fully vaccinated.
Yeah, and if you look at our speaker of the House, she's on her second booster, and she's already had coronavirus two times so far.
Yeah.
So I think that's your answer too. I've seen so many friends who are fully vaccinated with boosters and they've had COVID. And one of my friends recently had to go to an emergency room because he was struggling so much with it and he was fully vaccinated. So I think your statement is accurate.
I think ultimately it's a decision that, again, like my biggest thing is just medical freedom and bodily mm-hmm. autonomy, and that, you know, people have the right to, should be able to make an informed decision. Now, to be able to make an informed decision, you have to have all of the data. And I know there was like a court ruling with one of the vaccine companies where they didn't want to hand over some of the safety studies. I think my own opinion is that there's a lot of bias in the media. So, which we've seen that even if you, you know, bring up like, hey, there's a possibility of adverse effects, you know, you kind of get crucified. So I think that adults should be able to have the ability to make their own decision, whether that is to be vaccinated or to not be vaccinated. But that principle of bodily autonomy and medical freedom is really the principle that's even, in my opinion, more important than any specific vaccine. And that is, we don't really want to go down a road, I don't think, where, especially when we're dealing with experimental treatments mm-hmm. and vaccines, where we're forced to take a medical intervention and not to give up our right of informed consent in order to just live our lives.
So what is your opinion?
I can't believe you would say that the press has been not being supportive.
Yeah, I know.
What a shock.
That attitude. I'm really shocked. Isn't that amazing?
Really shocked. So Megan, what's your opinion of schools holding these vaccine shot drives, you know, at, you know, during school hours? Or
I personally don't think it's appropriate. I think that, I mean, one of the things that has really, in my opinion, opened the door for these vaccination clinics was the school testing program. Because in order to operate as a medical clinic, you have to have certain license requirements. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with the push to have in-school COVID testing, but they actually had to rewrite the, or write, I think, Governor Wolf, Secretary Levin, when Secretary Levin was the head of the Department of Health, had to write an order which basically allowed schools, if they use the license of the local health department, to function as kind of like a clinical laboratory. And I think that kind of maybe opened the door for the possibility of then, you know, oh, we can have, you know, clinics in the school and it operated by the school. I believe North Penn School District is possibly trying to have a medical, like a full medical clinic in their school. I mean, I personally don't think it's appropriate. I think that it's, again, maybe it's another chance to kind of separate parents from making decisions for their kids. Mm-hmm. But I think that as a parent, you know, I would be really unhappy if I sent my kid to school and they, you know, had a medical procedure or something that was done without my knowledge or consent.
Yeah, we're actually going to talk about that in a little bit, too, about other types of procedures that they're pushing in certain schools. But do you remember, I remember seeing this news report where they were coming out with a test for a classroom of kids where they would have the kids do their nose swab and then put each nose swab into the same canister. And then they were going to send us off to be tested. And I'm just... Yeah. I'm just like, I'm glad my daughter's done in another year.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually called pool testing. So there's lots of different ways you can do testing in school. And one of them is pool testing. And actually, at the beginning of the school year, the Department of Health announced a $87 million contract with a company called Ginkgo Bioworks. And this was actually, I know this because I've done a lot of Right to Know work with this topic. And back in the early summer and early June, there were several top officials in the Pennsylvania Department of Health who were tasked with being part of something called the ELC team, which was focused on creating, it was a national initiative operated by the CDC, and it was focused on bringing testing and vaccinations to schools at the start of the 2021 school year. So if you actually look up ELC funding, there was a huge amount of money that got poured into it. I believe that Pennsylvania received over $300 million there was a specific grant that I think was like $220 million just to go through testing. I mean, there's just huge numbers. And that was supposed to be parlayed into then this pool testing, which, yeah, required the kids to swab their noses and then they stick it in a bucket. And they, I guess the thought is that you test the whole bucket. And then if one person has, I think if the bucket tests positive for COVID, you go back and then test everyone individually again, which is just, I mean, it's just a little, it's crazy to me that people are making, like, I just think about like my 6-year-old. Like, I can't believe that we thought it was okay to just tell 6-year-olds, oh, if you want to come to school, you know, you need to get tested. Or that anyone would even suggest that as a part of education. And yeah. To be clear,
Megan,
I don't believe that
Megan,
any, yeah.
Yeah, I would like to ask you a question. You know, one of the things that has been occurring, I don't know if you have any data on that, but I know there's data out there. Some people have had severe reactions to the COVID vaccine. Now, that's true in a lot of other vaccines and things like that. But if someone's had a severe reaction to a COVID, they're recommending that they do not take another shot because of some of the other issues that can develop in their system, because clearly their body is rejecting this type of medical treatment. So are you saying that if a child who has been vaccinated for whatever reason and they had a severe reaction, and there are severe reactions to this, some are not too bad, but you're tired, headaches, muscle pain, chills, fever, nausea, pain in the area, redness and swelling, all these things are common effects, but are they forcing parents to get their children another vaccine even if they've had severe reaction to the first one?
I mean, I think that it's still voluntary in terms of whether or not you're going to get your child vaccinated. I don't think anyone, at least in Pennsylvania, is being forced to do that right now. But I think that, you know, if someone has a child with a reaction, it's probably something they really would want to speak with their doctor about and consider what is the, you know, the best path for them. I mean, I would say in terms of data, you know, obviously there are maybe some kids who are immunocompromised or, you know, again, it's a decision you'd make with your doctor, but COVID really at large, but it doesn't seem to have like a very strong impact on kids. I mean, there's a ton of data. And so I think whenever you're thinking about something that's particularly like the COVID vaccine that's under emergency use authorization, it hasn't really completed the full amount of testing or even we haven't really compiled that much data to know what are the long-term effects of this vaccine because it's so new. So, I mean, I think whenever a parent is making that decision, you really have to look at what are the potential risks and what are the benefits. And at least for me, in my opinion, I don't really see the benefits outweighing the risks in terms of getting this shot that we don't really know what the long-term effects are going to be.
Now, Megan, you've been speaking out on behalf of our children for about 2 years now, right? Would you say that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess since the school shut down.
Yeah.
I'm pretty vocal about kids being in school, I think, from the beginning.
Yeah, I want to read a statement that you made at the Bucks County Commissioners meeting in August of 2021. And this is actually what got my attention to you, because I was very impressed with how bold you were. You made the statement towards one of the county commissioners. You said, "You have proven you don't care about the mental health of our kids. You care about your political career. How many kids have struggled with depression and suicide this year because you are doing everything in your power to take away the normal school year our children need?" So what made you make such a bold statement to our commissioner in Bucks County?
Well, I kind of mentioned earlier, for about a year now, I've been doing a lot of work with Right to Know documents. And if anyone doesn't know what Right to Know it is, it's a way for citizens, journalists, anyone, if you would like to know kind of the behind the scenes of the government and have questions about a local agency, you can actually request documents and emails from these agencies about specific information. So I know, you know, Dr. Damsker all the way back in June of 2020 was recommending that kids went back to school full time in person. And I believe in that original guidance, he specifically cited, you know, the reasons were some of it was social and emotional, that kids being isolated, being home, particularly for younger children, for older children, that it was really it was very detrimental to their well-being and to their growth to be isolated in front of a computer all day. And then additionally, you know, we already had a lot of data showing that kids were really not affected by COVID. I'm not saying they weren't ever affected, but by and large, in terms of making a public health decision, thankfully, I mean, it was one actually really great news that kids really weren't getting very sick with this statistically. Mm-hmm. So I had kind of followed what happened. Like, you know, it was kind of wild to me to watch local districts, you know, Central Bucks is a good example, go from, hey, we're going to school, to all of a sudden kind of doing a 180 and saying, oh, no one's going to school. And then, you know, in the fall of 2020, there was just this huge battle to even get kids into school. So fast forward then to the summer of 2020, you know, there was kind of like a new battle. I think if you remember in like about June 2021, the vaccine was available to anybody who wanted it. Mm-hmm. And I remember we kind of had like this kind of 3 weeks of just kind of almost normalcy where I think people felt like, okay, you know, if you want to get vaccinated, you can get vaccinated, you know, we can kind of maybe move forward. And I think a lot of people hoped, especially
in the education space. We had a sigh of relief during that time.
Yeah. It was like 3 weeks. And then in July, all of a sudden it was like Delta, 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 Delta. Mm-hmm. So then Delta comes and there was all this pressure again for more mitigation in school. So I think what happened is that Dr. Damsker kind of got pressured or asked. I mean, I guess pressured is my own opinion, but from what I read, people were asking him to put out additional guidance. And now at the same time, behind the scenes, the state had been working on these testing and programs and these vaccine initiatives. So Dr. Damsker came out with this guidance on August 15, 2021, that was going to utilize the flu model of mitigation versus a measles model. Now, if you don't understand what that means, the flu model is to overly generalize, it's kind of like if you're sick, stay home, right? Mm-hmm. Basically, we're not going to go crazy contact tracing. We're not going to freak out over every exposure. We understand that if you're asymptomatic, you're probably not really spreading it. So we're going to kind of just try to get back to normal. If we have someone who's sick, we're going to have them stay home. But we're going to really work towards keeping children in school and trying to make school more normal. And unfortunately, I think that guidance really collided with the state's initiative. Mm-hmm. Because the very next day, Allison Beam, under federal guidance, announced this whole testing program, which was totally reliant on the need for contact tracing and quarantining to be relevant. So, I mean, the long and short of it is, if schools were following Dr. Damsker's guidance and the flu model, there really was no need for this testing initiative, multi-million-dollar testing initiative. And I don't think that went very well with the state. The state wasn't very happy about that. So what ended up happening is, on August 23rd, Allison Beam, and I'm sure you guys are probably familiar with this, mm-hmm. actually wrote a letter to the county commissioners asking them to change specifically the contact tracing and quarantining part of the school guidance, which is really remarkable because the Department of Health, the Department of Education was very aware that per the disease laws of 1955, Dr. Damsker had the legal authority to set the guidance for the schools, and Bucks County was doing really well. So it obviously upset me because I was paying attention, and I saw very quickly that this was very politically motivated, and I did not believe the motivation was to do what's best for the kids.
Yeah. You were definitely insightful with your statement, because I'm a mindset coach. That's my main career. And with all this going on, I remember thinking suicide, anxiety, and other mental illnesses or other mental issues in children is what I was watching for, and I was waiting to happen. Yeah. Because of all the choices that they were making. And you know, your statement just really hit me, because it's a lot of people weren't thinking about that. Some were saying it and claiming it, but by their actions, you could tell that they weren't really that concerned about it. And, mm-hmm. you know, we've seen it, and that so many children and even adults are still struggling due to these mandates and rules that were forced on us, you know, these past couple of years. And mm-hmm. even according to U.S. Surgeon General, a study was found that the rates of depression and anxiety worldwide doubled in kids since the beginning of the pandemic, and the number of suspected suicide attempts went up 51% in girls. It's so sad. And these numbers are bad, but we know that that's not the whole reality of mm-hmm. what's happening with our children.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's actually what I have the guidance that Dr. Damsker wrote on August 15th. And I'm just going to read this one part of it, because it touches on exactly what you're saying. So the effects of ongoing COVID-19 mitigation efforts have led to significant learning loss, mental health issues, and social adjustment difficulties in many students. Understandably, many parents are concerned about these effects in their children. And so his guidance was specifically saying, hey, you know, we're really seeing this outbreak of mental health issues. We're seeing kids who are really young, like struggling with depression. And, you know, we're seeing our teenagers. I mean, I feel so bad for anyone who had that was one of my big motivators, mm-hmm. really was my, like, hearing from people with teenagers. And because I'd spoken up about these issues, I often got messages from people I didn't even know telling me, you know, how their kids were really, really struggling. And they didn't want to say anything publicly because they want to protect their child's privacy, which is totally understandable. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just because people weren't necessarily always sharing it doesn't mean it wasn't happening. And I mean, it's just heartbreaking. And I really think it was also unnecessary.
Absolutely unnecessary. And, you know, Dr. Damsker, he had amazing forward thinking, and his mindset and his thought process on this is what we're seeing now. You know, it's the way, you know, we are implementing the strategy on how to deal with this. It's very, very similar.
I think the CDC has finally caught up to Dr. Damsker, right?
Exactly.
They finally have caught up to him 2 years later. And I mean, I've been thinking about this myself, about the difference between science and scientific consensus, which I think is probably relevant to everything that we've said. And it's just interesting, because if you go back to even, you know, summer 2020 in Europe, like, kids were going back to school. Mm-hmm. I mean, in other states, kids were going back to school. So there was a ton of science out there,
yep.
that said, hey, this is safe. And actually, when we look at the risks of kids not being in school, this is definitely where they need to be. But it's that difference. So the science really hasn't changed. It's just the scientific consensus has now changed, where now it's acceptable to say, okay, well, I guess school's okay.
Yeah.
You know,
we're given
the science. If you look back, the science was there in the summer of 2020, just
yes.
People didn't want to listen to it.
Yes, there were other countries, you know, allowing their kids to go to school, and they weren't having major outbreaks. It's like,
no,
we finally get approval from the powers to be, so we can, you know,
I think it's a real warning to us as a society. And I know there's people who are very concerned about that, you know, what is the scientific method is really a way of finding information. It's a mm-hmm. way of asking questions, and it involves a healthy amount of skepticism. And so if there's no skepticism within our science, then we're not really doing science, right? Because science is inquisitive, and you ask a lot of questions, and you know, you have a hypothesis. And if you don't find your hypothesis, you don't keep pressing it. You ask, okay, what do we need to change? And I think that's really the summer of 2020, particularly with schools, is where we really saw in my opinion, it really became very, I don't know if it was political, if there were just people were power hungry. I really don't know exactly, but I think it was definitely we veered away from trying to do what was best for kids to something else.
Yeah, I often try to wonder what is the motivations of whatever it is that's going on. And it was really hard to pinpoint the motivation of what happened this last year and a half, 2.5 years. You know, we all have our ideas, but what really happened, you know, we may never really understand the mm-hmm. whys of it all. But, you know, like all these things that are happening to our children, you know, because of the masking, the vaccines, the school closures, you know, school from home, you know, this is just a small part of, it is a big part, but it's just one part of what our children are going through. There's so many things that I wanted to talk about, but we only have a half hour left. So I wanted to move on to the other area that our children are dealing with. And they're being targets in some other ways that are confusing their mindset and their behavior, as well as ways that undermine the way parents choose to raise their children. And I wanted to give you mm-hmm. two examples of what is happening nationwide in other states and get your opinion on these. So one is in like Doss Elementary, Texas. They are holding community circles. They held a community circle for Pride Week. I think their Pride Week was just a couple weeks ago. And it was for kindergarten to fifth graders. And so they were going to discuss, you know, how pride affects their family, how pride, you know, affects their relationship with friends and a bunch of other things. But one thing that was listed on their instructions was part three. It said review the agreements. And one of the agreements was respect privacy. What we say in this room stays in this room. And then, and then further, they were to close the community circle by saying that, you know, we do not talk about this outside the classroom. So they actually reinforced that agreement.
Wow. And that was kindergarten through fifth grade, you
said? Yes. And this was done by the entire elementary school in Texas. And then, so that's one example. And then, as part of a social studies class, a New Jersey, so right next door to us, public middle school forced students to watch a video about a transgender man's hormone treatment without notifying their parents. The video is called 10 Years of Testosterone. It details the transition of an LGBT activist, Aiden Dowling, through hormone injections. And so this video was shown to these middle school kids without notifying the parents about this. And it had slideshows with definitions of different gender ideologies. And he made this statement after injecting himself with testosterone. He said, "You can build up the courage to stand up for yourself in a way that this is what you want to do with your life." So these are just two examples. And I mean, I have so many here that I could share, but imagine if your son, you know, or your daughter came home and said, "Mom, this is what I learned today. And this is what I saw today." Mm-hmm. How would you react to this?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the bigger issue of all of this is or the primary issue is really just not having parents involved mm-hmm. with their kids, right?
Exactly.
And an issue of what really is the purpose of school. I mean, is the purpose of school to teach our kids about math and writing, or is the purpose of school to teach them about, you know, in depth about their gender and sexuality? I mean, mm-hmm. I think most parents feel that it's their job to teach their children on things like gender and sexuality. I mean, I think that that's really the heart of the issue. I mean, that first story you told about the circle of not yeah. telling anyone what happens is actually really frightening. And I think, you know, regardless about if a school told kids that about anything, I mean,
exactly.
I know for myself with my own kids, one of our primary rules is, you know, we don't have any secrets because secrets hurt people.
Yes.
You know, and in terms of like even trying to protect our kids, you know, when you think about if there was someone who was abusive or, you know, someone who wasn't a safe person, that's typically what they do is they tell kids, mm-hmm. don't tell anyone about this. So, I mean, that's just shocking. It's scary. And I think that that's something that most parents across the board would agree that that's not really a safe way to engage with children.
No, I absolutely agree. One of the parents even said, I felt as if I was blindsided. They're learning about this ideology of gender before they even have classes on actual biologies of males and females, you know, and it's just probably how most parents felt. And I think this
right.
is not a party issue either. I think this is just a human
no.
issue. You know, I think.
Yeah, I think that parents, you're right. Parents should have the ability to, I mean, thinking about what is the purpose of school.
Mm-hmm.
Why would there be this need to be talking about these kind of things, especially with young kids? I mean, when you think about a kindergartner, I mean, you think about all the places you take your kids, like you take them to the dentist, you take them to sports, you take them to, you know, a music lesson, a birthday party. If any adult started talking about this stuff with your kids,
exactly.
you would find it offensive and you would run the other way
yeah.
because there's just really no need for, you know, anyone in a certain, you know, professional environment to be speaking about this with your young child. So
yeah.
the idea that schools feel emboldened or that it's even appropriate, it just kind of blows my mind.
You made a really good point because I know if I was at an event or a party with anybody, I don't care how close I knew you, and you were starting to talk about these things with my children.
Yeah.
I don't think my children would not be around you ever again.
No.
No, I mean,
it's just, you know, it's crazy. I mean, when you think about it in just terms of, you know, taking it out of like the Twitter sphere where everyone's kind of crazy towards each other and just
yes.
thinking about it in practical everyday life. Like if, you know, my first grader is at the dentist and they start talking about their sexuality, I would be like, okay, we're leaving
yeah.
because it's just not an appropriate topic to talk about with a young child, period.
Yes.
Why on earth would you need to talk about that with a developing young child?
And what confuses me is that why is this topic so prevalent in, you know, in schools, especially in the young ages, kindergarten, you know, through middle school? Like, why are they so intent on getting this message into the heads, into the mindsets of these children, when there are so many other important things that children would get some really true value for that would improve the quality of their life, you know, after school?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could mm-hmm. think of so many things, like, you know, critical thinking skills, for example, how to start
mm-hmm.
a business. You know, even little kindergartens can, you know, do a little chore about, you know, a lemonade stand. You know, like, there's
mm-hmm.
so many things that they could be focused on educating our children about, and yet this is what one of the main focuses is on, and to me it's very disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I
one of the things that I was going to say, one of the things you bring about the lemonade stand, not only about that, but then they could teach kids on how to make sure that the inspectors are all taken care of, that all the forms are filled out and all the code, because you need a college education to open up a lemonade stand today.
Yeah, do you need
just
a license,
you know,
in certain areas for a child to do that? Yeah, I remember hearing
that
a few years ago, and it's disturbing. I mean, so one thing I do like that's being done in Florida, I mean, I like a lot of things that are being done in Florida, But it goes to what we were just talking about, is the Parental Rights in Education Act. And this is a great act that DeSantis just put into law, I think, sometime this week. It prohibits classroom discussion of sexual orientation and gender identity from kindergarten to third grade. And one other part that we're not hearing on the news too much, which I think is a really important part of this act, is that the bill also prohibits school districts from maintaining procedures that withhold information or encourage students to withhold information relating to the student's mental, emotional, or physical health or well-being from parents. A school district may only withhold information if a prudent person would reasonably believe that disclosure would subject the student to abuse, abandonment, or neglect. So, and that's something we were just talking about before, is that, you know, there's so many of these things that we're told to keep hidden from our children. One of those is like that pride circle. But there are other things that I remember, you know, like birth control, there's actually some schools where they're encouraging you not to tell your parents if you think you are transgender, and instead talk to the school about this. So I really, really like that Florida did this. I mean, what's your opinion of this bill?
Yeah, I mean, I think anything that supports parents' rights is great. I mean, I don't think why would you, again, I mean, I know as a parent, one of the things I taught my kids since they were young is that there's nothing you shouldn't feel comfortable telling me, particularly if someone's telling you not to tell me something, you need to tell me, because that's actually a red flag, right?
When
we think about trying to equip our children to navigate this world, if there was ever someone who is trying to, you know, be inappropriate or abusive towards them, that the big rule is we don't have any secrets and we talk about things. So I just think that as a culture, as a community, we always want to create places that are safe for kids. And I mean, I think about what just happened in Central, or just came to light in Central Bucks, about a teacher who had sexual allegations from like the 90s. And he just got caught.
Was that the choir teacher?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And you think about that was at a school for almost, I think it was like, he was there for 30 years. So, I think, unfortunately, as parents, we're navigating this world where there are so many people who are legitimately predatory towards our children. And so whatever environment they're in, whether it's school, whether it's sports, whether it's church, we have to be so careful and make sure that as communities, we're creating communities that have transparency, because transparency ultimately protects children, right? The more transparent an organization is, the more likely it's going to keep people who are predatory out, because it's going to be harder for them to pull off their nonsense. So, I mean, I think I struggle to understand why anybody would not support parental involvement and parental and transparency for parents. And I think, I don't know the exact number, but I remember hearing that most people in Florida actually do support the bill, who've actually read the bill and understand that it's not an anti-anyone bill. It's just saying, hey, you know, kindergarten through third grade, we're not going to talk about these topics. But when you apply that logically, you think about your life. Well, yeah, I mean, again, like I said, I really wouldn't want my dentist talking to this about my kids.
No.
Like, I wouldn't expect their sports coat. So it's very logical that, we don't really need to talk about this with young kids. There's no reason to.
Yeah.
Megan and Joanne, you know, one of the things that's missed in this conversation is that part of that particular problem is that the heads of these unions are very driven ideologically toward a particular bent of global concept. And as far as they're concerned, they're right and everybody else is wrong. They are like, there's a movie called I, Robot with Will Smith, who did this movie pre-Punch, just to let you know that. But the basic movie, at the end, this master computer was controlling the world through these robots. And at the end, Will Smith is trying to kill this robot, and the robot's saying, well, wait a minute, I found out that you humans can't even protect yourself, so I got to do it for you by basically killing you. And it's that type of concept of ideologically driven people not open to discussions like you're having, ideas that let's do more of what works and less of what doesn't work, really gets us all into a problem. And I see a lot of that. In Florida, they're open to ideas, and they're open for frank discussion.
it's refreshing to see, you know, supposedly about 60 to 70% of voters on both sides are agreeable with this bill. But what's really disturbing is, I'm not sure if you have, either one of you have seen Disney's stance on this.
Yes.
This is another place, you know, our schools are supposed to be a place where we could send our kids safely and not worry about them. But we find that's not the case now. And now we have this company who, you know, is focused on creating material for young children. They are choosing to use its vast resources to focus on peddling transgenderism to children. And in their response to this act, the CEO of Disney stated that it should never have passed and should never have been signed into law. Our goal as a company is for this law to be repealed by the legislature and or struck down by the courts, and we remain committed to supporting the national and state organizations working to achieve that. And
you know, the thing that's missed by this, and this is always happens, when you push for when these people do that, the whole concept of what they're talking about in Florida gets suppressed.
Yep.
And eventually this thing blows up in everybody's face. You cannot force people to be driven in a certain way that's, you know, against science, that makes no sense, that doesn't focus on the things we want our kids to learn. And later on, if they want to be in the LGBTQ community, no problem. I have no problem with that at all. But this is craziness that's talking, and it's forcing people to believe something that they don't believe in.
Absolutely.
It's all going to blow up.
And it's,
and by the way, Walt Disney was very conservative in his approach to life.
Yes.
And he'd be turning over his grave right now to see what happened to this great company that bears his name.
Yeah. That's what a lot of people are saying, that, you know, he would be, irate over all of this. And, you know, it's really disturbing to see that they're taking a stance, and, but it's, you know, it's geared towards children, and they're even going further than just, you know, getting involved politically with this. They're also dedicating 50% of their characters to be LGBTQ or minority by the end of the year, which the minority part, fine. You know, I understand that. But when they want 50% of the characters to also include LGBTQ characters, that's disturbing, because this is for little children to watch. So, you know, question for you, Megan. I mean, you have two little ones. I know I have taken my daughters to Disney many times. We were just there last year. And, you know, we were there a couple years before that. We've been to Disney in California as well. We did belong to Disney Plus until I read all of this information. But what about you? Your children are so young. Like, after hearing this and seeing this, what do you think your stance with Disney would be?
I mean, to be honest, we're really, we try not to laugh. We're pretty specific with the content our kids watch anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my husband's never been a fan of Disney ever. So, I mean, we canceled Netflix when they had that documentary. I forget what it was, but it was really like overtly... Yes, it overtly sexualized children. And I just thought, I can't support a company that is okay with this, because our kids need to be protected. You know, and as a mom of a daughter, it just really upset me, because even though it's just a movie, I'm like, those are still real little girls, right? And we're living in this crazy time. So, I mean, we're pretty, you know, we are pretty choosy about what our kids watch and experience anyway. I mean, I think for them to come out again, like we talked about this bill that really is just saying things that, in my opinion, are pretty common sense that I think most people agree with, is just kind of crazy. I think they seem very, 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 very progressive, and that they really want to have their full spectrum of progressive values. I guess that's going to be the hallmark of their company. And I think, you know, as a company, if that's what they want to do, they're entitled to do that as a private company. I mean, I think we see things like the Daily Wire just announced they're going to be really investing into a children's programming that has a more conservative bent. And I think what's going to happen is, I think we're going to see a kind of like almost a bifurcation of society, which I think in some ways we're already seeing, where, you know, people are going to, they're not going to necessarily just accept whatever one entity says you have to accept this, I think people will find other content and other things to do. And there's a lot of content out there, so
Absolutely.
That's not hard to find alternative content.
I would like to point out that a lot of these companies are hypocritical because they will deal with countries and leaders that are, I mean, if you take all the money that they get from the Arab world, I mean, those people throw gays off of buildings, and they would never allow a transgender person to exist in their country. And look at China. I mean, they're basically doing ethnic cleansing with the Uyghurs, or I think that's how you pronounce it. So the hypocrisy in some of these companies is just unbelievable.
Yes.
That goes on. And it's just wrong at every level. And they're creating these divisions that just creates more hate and more distrust. So they're not doing anything to unify us, to make us a homogeneous world, accepting and living with each other. And this is the part that really they're making everybody a victim. And if you feel that you're a victim, you're going to take it out on somebody else because he's making or she's making you a victim. Mm-hmm. This is the hypocrisy of these people. It's just unbelievable to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point, Stan. And you know, to go further to your point about Megan, you mentioned like, oh, these are just stories, you're right, you know, that the kids are watching. You made a statement similar like that. But like, you know this, that they're not just stories, right? And the CEO of Disney actually made this statement that I just had to share because it just shows how aware that they know exactly what they're doing in terms of the content that they're sharing. He wrote, because he was being attacked for not making a statement on Twitter about this, and he said that there's better tactics to produce lasting change than mission statements and Twitter posts. I believe that the best way for our company to bring about lasting change is through the inspiring content we produce. We are telling important stories, raising voices, and I believe changing hearts and minds. And then he lists shows like Modern Family and Love, Victor as examples. And then he continued and he said, these and all of our diverse stories are our corporate statements and are more powerful than any tweet or lobbying effort. And this is the part that really stuck out. I believe firmly that our ability to tell such stories and have them received with open eyes, ears, and hearts would be diminished if our company were to be a political football in any debate. So it just goes to show very well he knows, you know, these movies are received by open eyes and ears and hearts of children. You know, you know, it's pretty disturbing and twisted when you really think about it.
Yeah, I mean, you think it, you know, yeah, I don't know. I just, yeah, you just have to watch and hold your kids and, you know, everyone, you know, live out your own values. And I'm very interested to see what the kind of content that the Daily Wire creates.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I didn't know about that.
Maybe we can all just go outside more, right? We probably all spend too much time in front of the TV anyway. So
yes. I raised
kids outside.
Yes, I raised my children without watching TV because I stopped watching TV when I was 19, and they weren't in front of a TV unless they were over their friends' houses, of course, because everybody else was watching TV. So I totally agree with that statement. You know, take them hiking, go to the beach, you know, teach them how to build tree houses and stuff like that, you know. But I wanted to talk about one more thing, and we only have a few minutes left, but Leah Thomas situation. I saw you posted something on Twitter about it, and I wanted to bring this up because we are in a primary election right now. For U.S. in our county, in Bucks County, where you and I both live, Brian Fitzpatrick voted in favor of a bill that allowed a situation like what happened with Leah Thomas to happen. So can you explain it? Because I think you understand it a little bit more than I do.
I mean, my understanding of he was supporting the Equality Act, which would of the Equality Act would is that it would kind of codify situations like the Leah Thomas situation in women's sports for forever. And also situations where you have like biological males would be able to use the women's bathrooms, which, you know, as mother of a young daughter, I find that concerning just from a physical safety perspective, right? Mm-hmm. To open up the door to biological males, you know, any biological male, I mean, using these intimate spaces for girls. And then with the sports, I mean, I think that anyone who saw that recent swimming championship, and I think this is, again, this isn't a bipartisan issue. I mean, I think about having been a female athlete myself and knowing how hard girls work at their sports to be the best that they can. You think about how far women's sports have come in the past 50 years. And to me, it feels like all that progress going backwards, because reality is that women are just never going to be able to compete with biological men. It's just never going to happen. There's a huge biological advantage that a male has when competing against women. And it's kind of crazy that we're in an age where you even have to state that as a bedrock truth. So, yeah, I mean, I really feel for women and athletes and for our daughters. I really hope we can preserve the integrity of women's athletics, because I think our girls deserve a chance to thrive and not to be in situations where they can only hope for second place.
Yeah. You also shared this, which I saw on your Twitter account, from the Babylon Bee, which is, what do you call it, satire magazine,
yeah.
Online magazine.
Yeah.
After watching Leah Thomas, little girls just dreams to just winning second place at Olympics.
I know. It's really sad, though, because, I mean, when you look at it's funny, but it's also just sad when you think about how hard these young women are working and how hard so many women have worked to pave the way for things like college athletics for females and for the evolution of women's sports, and then to kind of have it be pulverized. And I mean, I don't really think that's obtaining equality, right?
No. Well, it looks like time is almost up. So really quick, Megan, how can people find information about you and, you know, learn more about what you're doing?
I mean, I have a website called Parents Have the Right to Know, and I'm also just working on a podcast to kind of talk about what's happened in Bucks County. So if you want to find out more about information about that, I'll have it posted there.
All right. Thank you, Megan. Thank you, Stan. Have a great weekend, everyone.
You too. Have a great weekend. Thanks.